you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey guys, this is Mark Striegel, and before we get into today's episode of the Talking Metal Podcast, I do want to thank those who bring you this show, those who make this happen. And we are talking about the Patreon supporters. They get a bonus podcast at least once a week, sometimes two a week. They get bonus videos depending on what tier they're in. They get discussion, comments, insight, connection to me on Patreon. So join me there and you will be in good company with people like these upper tier folks. Brad Dahl out in Utah. Love seeing the pictures of you, Brad, with the Talking Metal mask. Great stuff. Thank you for sharing those. Chris Riley, Dan Gerwan, Matt Carroll, Mike Jones, Steven Saylor, and Steve Hoker. Wow. You guys are incredible. Thank you for everything you do for me with your Patreon pledges. And we also have a lot of other great people joining us, like Anthony Mackey, who's on the show today. Thank you, Anthony. Great talking with you. Andrew Miller, David Gray, Drake, Fred Roots, Glenn Watson, Jason Seth, Jeremy Weltman, Joe Ryan, Joey Vancherry, Mario Charantz, Metal Dan, Mike Street, Sam Soupy, Sean Richmond, Steve Rodriguez, Tommy Anderson, Jerry from Long Island, Gregory Muse, James Bennett, Jean Eugene DX, Jean-Francois Blas, Johan Enderstrom, Ron Keel, Richard Langridge, Leo from Alaska, Kenny McCrimmon, and John Boivari. Thank you, dudes. You guys are awesome. The other way you can support me, if you don't want to do Patreon, which I highly recommend Patreon, I'm begging you, please join us there. We need some more support. It's honestly, it's just not what I needed to be to continue doing this show. It's not a threat. I'm committed to this for a little while, but we need to get this Patreon thing up. I need to get more support on Patreon. So if you like this show, if you like what I'm doing on the Talking with Mark Striegel podcast, if you want more bonus content, which some people even think the bonus content's better than the free stuff, and Anthony Mackey will vouch for that, I believe, today when I talk with him. If you want to support a good cause, $2 a month gets you a bonus podcast every week on Patreon. $5 a month gets you that bonus podcast plus a Talking Metal t-shirt, which I will mail out to you, all sizes available. So, yeah, please consider the Patreon thing. It's very, very important for the long term continuation of Talking Metal. We do no commercials here at the moment. I wish we did, but we don't. And this is really our only way to support. There are some other ways, using the Amazon links where I get some pennies back on your purchases. If you spend a dollar, I think I get, you know, 3 cents back on that. And you guys are using the Amazon links, so I do appreciate that. And every little penny counts. The other way is a straight up PayPal donation. You can do that on my site, markstriegel.net, markstriegel.net. And the other way is just spreading the word. Go on social media, let people know. Tag me, tag the people on this show. All right? People like Will Wallner, who is my guest today, and Todd Latore of Queensryche. He's on the show too. So let's do this. This is the Talking Metal Podcast. Please support, guys. This is Talking Metal, established in 2005. Available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, and at TalkingMetal.com. All right, welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast. My name is Mark Striegel. Always glad to be hanging here with you guys. What fun hanging out with John Astronomy on the latest, or the last, I should say, episode of this podcast. We will be hanging again on the live stream this Thursday, which is available on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/talkingmetal. We'll be streaming live there. I think Ricky Rackman's going to join us, the former host of the Great Headbangers Ball. Some other people in the works, and we're trying to figure it out. But there will be a live stream from 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's what L.A. time starts at 4 o'clock out in the West Coast. So this Thursday, consider joining us for the live stream. And yeah, man, like I mentioned, Will Wallner, a guy Victor and I were discussing on a recent episode of the Mark Striegel podcast, which is available only for my patrons, and trying to figure out how this guy is doing it, you know, Victor and I, because he's doing it, living the dream, Lemmy's apartment, recording great music, and doing the Sunset Strip thing in L.A. Yeah, so we talk with him. I talk with him today, and we get an honest, really good look at how this guy is making it happen, and props to Will. I really like Will. And I really like his music, too, with White Wizard and his solo stuff, which I cannot wait to hear the new Duel record, which he's going to tell us about. He's working on it now with Vinnie Appice on drums. Oh, my God. One of my favorite drummers. So Will Wallner will be on shortly to discuss that. Then a little bit later, we have Todd Latore of Queensryche, who has a great new solo record coming out. This interview was played in its entirety on the Talking with Mark Striegel podcast. This is an edited version of it, slightly shorter version of it here on Talking Metal. And yeah, I threw it right up on the Talking with Mark Striegel feed because he was talking about John Schaefer from Ice Earth, and I knew that was going to be timely news. And here we are, maybe like 5 days after I recorded that interview, probably about a week after, by the time you're hearing this, a week after I recorded that interview with Todd, and John Schaefer is now in custody, from what we are understanding via our favorite website, one of them, Blabbermouth. We also love Brave Words and Metal Sludge and Metal Sucks and Metal Injection, all those sites. We love them. But yeah, John Schaefer of Iced Earth in custody, and he turned himself in, so maybe he'll get some points for that. But it's sad, you know, that the country's so divided. That's why I'm glad we can just, you know, hang here on the podcast, and I try to avoid the politics, at least on the Talking Metal stream here. So let's just hang, brothers and sisters of metal here, uniting over the music we love. Right on. So cool, man. So let's take a look at what else is in the news recently. Paul Di'Anno. Now, Paul Di'Anno is launching a fundraiser for his knee surgery. This is a guy I've spoken with three or four times through the years, and including an excellent in-person interview, which even Paul told me years later that he just loved, which is up on my YouTube channel somewhere, buried amongst the hundreds and hundreds of videos. And I thought Paul had some surgery. I know he had like a growth or tumor removed, and apparently, I know he's been having trouble with his knees. I thought his hips too, but yeah, so he's finally waiting or looking to get this knee replacement surgery, and there has been a crowdfunding campaign launched so Paul can get that. And even way back when I interviewed him, which God must have been 10 years ago at this point, in the hotel lobby of where he was staying in New Jersey, and then I drove him to his gig in New York City. It was amazing. But yeah, man, it's crazy because even at that point, I know he was using a cane. So poor Paul. Now, my whole mystery with Paul is we were friends on Facebook. He friended me. It's rare that a rock star that I admire so greatly and is performed on some of my favorite records of all times, friends me on Facebook, but he did. And then at some point he unfriended me, which I just don't understand. I have to admit it made me sad, and I don't know what I did to warrant that unfriending. I did notice he unfriended some other people that were mutual friends between us, so I'm going to not take it personally. But Paul, I love you, and I hope you are doing okay. And, you know, Paul said in the release, I guess, that went out, that he nearly died 4 years ago. He had been in Argentina, and he had sepsis. I don't even know what that was. He was very, very sick. I just made it home. He made it home to England and then straight into the hospital. And he's really been in and out of the hospital, it sounds like, for years now. So I need to talk to you, Paul. Please, let's have an interview. He says I'm not getting better, not yet, until I've had both my knees operated on. Yeah, sad stuff, man. Really. Paul, we love you. Please get well, and I'm going to consider donating to the crowdfunding campaign today to get Paul some help, much needed help. Motley Crue recently turned 40 years old. That's great. Incredible stuff. Love Motley. Still one of my favorite bands. Hoping the stadium tour happens this summer, but I think we all need to get that vaccine. It's like Paul Stanley said, the vaccine only works if you're vaccinated. I have been vaccinated, my first dose. I know it's hard to get, but you got to keep trying. This should be everyone's priority. And in the meantime, let's keep wearing masks. I'm not one of these guys who's like, we're going to be wearing masks the rest of our lives. Fuck masks. I hate wearing them. But I'm going to wear them until we're all back on target and it seems normal again. You know, we have to, guys. Let's stay safe. Please don't be a knucklehead. Come on. What else is in the news? Dee Snider on his next solo album. The creative juices are flowing and inspiration is there. Listen, I don't mind another Dee Snider solo record, but I don't know. As much as I love Dee Snider, I have to admit it's not something I'm longing for. I mean, I love Dee Snider, but yeah, maybe I could be surprised, you know? I mean, and I don't mean that in a negative way, because I'm sure he's very capable of delivering a great record and will. But I mean, maybe I'll surprise myself that when I hear it, I'll fall in love with it and really, really love it. So I'm just being honest. And, you know, I love Dee. I love Twisted Sister. Amazing stuff. And of course, we lost two great icons. Tim Bogart of Vanilla Fudge, a band that was influential on bands like Led Zeppelin and Deep Purple, possibly even Black Sabbath, to that matter. I think Carmine Appice, the drummer, has told me that they influenced Sabbath. And and Sylvain of the New York Dolls, who seemed to garner more press than Tim Bogart. And I do understand that, you know, Sylvain is this influential guy, but he didn't sell nearly the records that Vanilla Fudge did. However, New York Dolls, much more in the media, probably more cited as an influence by bands. And I don't mean that in any disrespect to Vanilla Fudge, because I believe Tim Bogart should have gotten more press. And I spoke with Carmine on the phone right after Tim died, and Carmine was definitely really shook up about that. Carmine Appice. I've been posting some videos of him that I did in videos that I taped, interviews I taped with him in his apartment. It was like a 4-hour sit-down session in his penthouse apartment in New York City before COVID, back a while, quite a bit before COVID, actually. But I'm finally getting those edited, and there's a great one up there of him talking about his time with Ozzy Osbourne, and one up there of him talking about his time with Rod Stewart. And for the record, people putting comments on Facebook, that is not a wig on Carmine's head. It's obviously dyed. I mean, he's in his 70s, you know, it's obviously dyed, but he showed me that it is his true hair. I believe I even touch his hair, and I feel like I need to take that little clip from the interviews that I shot with him in his apartment and just title it "Carmine is not wearing a wig" and prove to everyone that is his real hair. Probably not his real hair color, but his real hair. So there you have it. Let's do this. Let's talk with Will Wolner here on Talking Metal. Again, coming up later, we have Todd LaTorre, we have Anthony Mackey, and we have my thoughts on one of the greatest records ever, Kiss Alive. Here we go, Will Wolner. Hey, it's Mark Striegel, and we are talking with guitarist Will Wolner. How are you, Will?
I'm doing good, thanks.
We were just trying to figure out how many times you've been on the show, because I knew it was at least one, but you're telling me it might have been two, which is very possible because we've done over 900 of these episodes, and I tend to lose memory of everything. But I know I've listened to interviews with you, too. I know you've spoken with Victor before and other places, so... Anyways, great to connect with you again. And you sent me over a new track called Back on the Strip, which I love it, man. It's really, really good. Sincerely mean that. One thing that really struck me, besides the great songwriting and the great playing that is taking place on this song, is the production. There seems to be, you guys have reverted back to a time when the production seemed more organic and real. And we hear so many good songs today that in a lot of times I feel like get ruined because they're dialing in amp tones and the Kemper and all this other stuff. And it's just files and there's no real feel to it. So I want to talk about that. But first, let's talk about the actual song and about the upcoming release. Again, Back on the Strip. And to me, that title alone kind of goes with your story. Because you were in Los Angeles and then you were gone from Los Angeles. Now you're back in Los Angeles. So let's start with the actual song. There's a lot to unwrap here in my intro, but the song is great, man. Who's on the song with you?
Okay. Yeah. So it's, you know, me on guitar, my wife Vivian sings, we wrote the song, and, it's Vinny Appice on drums. He's a good friend of ours. He played on virtually everything we've ever done. And then it's John Leon from White Wizard on bass.
Yeah.
And yeah, like you said, man, it's like autobiographical because we moved away from LA to Berlin for a few years.
Right.
And then we just came back, decided to move back to LA last year. And we lived just off, we moved back to just off the Sunset Strip in LA. And we thought, well, let's write a song about it called Back on the Strip. And, yeah, it's just like a straightforward rock and roll song, and the lyrics kind of like have a lot of throwbacks to like all of our favorite albums and stuff, and there's like little sort of like references to like our favorite bands in there. And it's cool what you're saying about the production too, because that's something that we really like. That's like my personal style, is to keep it organic. And you know, I play through real Marshall amps. These are like all original, like tube amps from the 80s.
And you hear that. You hear that. Yeah. And I don't mean to call anybody out, but we had a guitar player who was on the show recently, and he played on a lot of classic albums from the 80s. And you could just, I guess I can mention his name. Maybe I'll edit it out, but Wolf Hoffman. He, you know, and I said, you know, your sound back then was so great. And you could almost hear the tubes of those Marshalls. And what he said, well, now my sound's even better. And when I hear New Accept, which they still put out good music, but I don't hear that in the room feel, and I can't hear those tubes of the Marshall anymore. I hear like a dialed in heavy guitar sound, but yeah. To me, you lose some of the personality when you do that.
100%. Everyone always tells me about Kemper and stuff, and it's nothing against that. And they are useful, but for the real sound, you can tell the difference. Like I can tell the difference right away. And so it's just my personal thing. I like to keep it all old school. That's like what I love. I love that classic Marshall sound. And so I always record with that. And like everywhere I live, I actually build like a soundproof enclosure so I can really crank them up super loud and saturate the tubes to get that tone. And just talking as well, you were really cool about talking about the production. I should say the producer on this song is the same guy that did all the White Wizard stuff. His name is okay. Ralph Pack.
Right.
And it's actually our first time working with a producer. And I felt like, yeah, he really added another element to it to kind of like take it up to another level from what we were doing before. So, I'm pretty excited about it.
I'm excited about it too, man. It sounds great. And again, the song is Back on the Strip. Can people hear this? Is it released? Is it on Spotify or Apple Music or anything like that?
I think I'm going to put it out now. I was going to basically, we decided when we moved back to LA, we wanted to make a new album. And like, this was going to be like a big thing. We're going to move back to LA. We're going to write an album. We're going to get back into rock and roll and all this stuff. And we started recording it. And then all the pandemic stuff hit when we started. So we actually kind of like did the majority of this song before the pandemic. But then because of the lockdown, we couldn't get into the studio with the producer to like finish the mixing and stuff. But now we've just started back up again. So this is the only song that's fully finished. And it will be a whole album of stuff. But I think, we'll just put this out. I think definitely on Spotify and on YouTube for everyone to hear very, very soon. Cool. It's just the tip of the iceberg. We have so many cool new songs, and in my opinion, like the other stuff we're working on is like way cooler as well. So it's like
really okay. Well, I do want to hear about the full album and the other songs, but before we move off of this song, what a personality Vinny Appice has on the drums. You listen to this song Back on the Strip by you and your wife and John on bass, but that personality of his drumming, it brings you right back to, you know, Holy Diver, Mob Rules, you know, I mean, he's got such flavor, and it always drives me nuts when I hear somebody say, well, as long as you have the singer in a band, the fans aren't going to notice. But to me, everyone's personality, not everyone, but if you're a good player and you are able to express your emotion freely, that comes through your playing, whether you're a drummer, a guitar player, a bassist, or a singer. And to me, I just love hearing him play because it brings me back to all the great music he's given us through the years. And I mean, you got him right there delivering his classic style, and it sounds great on the song.
Yeah, you are so right when you talk about that. Vinny has a drum style where when you hear him playing the drums, you can hear it's him. And in my opinion, that's a real musician. A lot of times with drummers, like session drummers, they're kind of like faceless. You know, they don't have much personality they're playing. But with Vinny, it's just like so heavy. And the way he plays, for musicians, they would know this, he plays slightly behind the beat. Gives a very unique feel to his sound. And then it also comes back to the production thing you were talking about, because nowadays drummers will go in, they'll record, and then the producer will like cut up all the tracks and like make it perfectly in time and like make sure that everything is super, super tight. But on this, it's like it would be a crime to do that to Vinny. Because you remove the soul, you remove the personality of his playing when you do that. So I with the producer, we're on the same page. I didn't need to tell him, but you know, we just leave it as it is, and that's how you get that feel and that power. You're so right. I remember like when I was like 22 and I first met Vinny, and I asked him if he played drums on one of the songs, and it was like one of the best experiences of my life to hear his drums in one of my songs, because I could hear it was him playing, you know, with me. And it's like, yes, I'm listening to actually like Vinny Appice play on one of my songs. This is cool as hell.
Yeah.
And dude, personality wise, he's the nicest guy. He's so cool. One of the nicest guys I've ever met. He's been so helpful to me and Vivian. Like I say, if we ever need drums on one of our songs, he's just like, you know, an email away. So it's very, very cool.
Yeah. Great guy for sure. And let's talk about the full album. I know there's a name set for it, right? Can you reveal that to us and let us know what else and who else we can expect on the full length record?
Yeah. I mean, the album is, it's called Duel, which is a title I came up with, which I think is cool. And it's basically, like I said, I moved back to LA because I wanted to get back into rock and roll. And I sort of set myself this sort of like target in my head, which is I just want to record a great rock and roll album. That's like with great production, great songs, and really like put everything into it to kind of like get back into doing music, because I'd taken a break while I was living in Berlin. And like I say, I think the title's cool. I got it from a book that I read, a very long book by a Japanese author. And there's this one scene where there's like a duel between the two main characters. And as I was reading, I was like, you know, I should call my album Duel. I think that would be cool. And right now we're working on like the artwork for it. It's going to have like, I also make comic books. So I work with a lot of comic book artists. So there's going to be a lot of very cool artwork in the booklet of the album. And there's actually going to be like a comic book story to go with it called Duel. And so it's all going to kind of like play together. And then in terms of who's going to be on the album, I think I'm going to stick with Vinny and John Leon on bass.
Yeah, why not?
For the majority of it, there'll be a few other guest spots as well. But I want to try to keep it just one single lineup. But yeah, there's a lot of cool songs. Like, I really want to try to kind of, I don't know, explore my creativity. And so like we just wrote this one song. It's called Pay to Play, which is kind of like, musicians will know what that means.
Sure.
But it's like, yeah, so we're kind of like really trying to like, I don't know, just put it all out there in terms of like, you know, how we feel like as musicians.
Right on. And I do want to talk a little bit more about music and then kind of get into your history and story, which I know music is interwoven with that. But your wife, let's go to her first. Can you tell us a little bit about her and your musical relationship?
Yeah. Well, I met her when I moved to LA in 2008. And before I did, I put an ad out on Craigslist when I was still in England, getting ready to move. Just saying, I'm moving to LA, I'm looking for a band, and she replied. And at first, because we were just communicating with email, I thought it was a guy.
Okay.
She actually sent me some clips of her voice, and I mean, she has kind of like a powerful voice, and I honestly thought it was just kind of like a guy singing like 80s Sunset Strip songs.
Wow, okay.
Anyway, then it was a bit awkward when we then clicked, oh, you're a woman, okay, well, as soon as I got to LA, I met her and, you know, things took their course and we ended up in a relationship. But she is just, she's my partner, but it's like, it's so cool because we share the same musical influences. She was the first person who knew who Blue Murder were. She's like [S2] Right. [S1] A bigger fan of music than I am. You know, she introduced me to a bunch of stuff, which I never heard. You know, she's a massive Thin Lizzy fan. And she would always be playing me all these really deep cuts of Thin Lizzy, you know, and introducing me to all of these musicians, which I'd never heard of. And so it's really cool that I found someone who like shares the same passion for this music.
And that's a rare thing because I know so many people in marriages and relationships where it's like, yeah, we don't really have that much in common. So you're lucky to have that with your wife, that you share a passion for music.
Yeah, the on the flip side, though, it gets a little bit intense sometimes when we're being creative. And it's a bit like, because we are in a relationship, I can sort of be more honest with her and I'll say, Viv, that really sucks. Like if she comes up with an idea which I don't like, and then she gets really mad with me because, you know, I would never say, I wouldn't be so, honest to like a fellow musician. I would say, hey, maybe we should try something else. And with Viv, I'm just come out of it.
Right on.
You know, we're going to try something else. So she'll come to me and go, Will, you know, when you're soloing, you do realize you're out of tune and stuff like this. I'm like, okay.
Right.
So, but it's cool. It's really cool. And like I say, it's something that we've been making music together since we got together like 10 years ago. And it's just, yeah, it's something that we really just love to do. It's like our passion.
It's awesome. And let's talk about White Wizard. You have a history with that band. And of course you mentioned John, the really leader of White Wizard, I guess I would call him, is
absolutely
doing the, bass for your album. And what is the status of White Wizard right now?
Well, I guess I'll give you some breaking news. We just recorded a brand new song as well, which is going to come out very soon.
Okay, awesome.
And John might get mad with me for saying this, but I'm just going to say we have a very cool singer on this.
Okay.
Album, on this song, Mark Bowles from Yngwie.
Oh, okay. Wow. Cool.
Song. Yeah. And we just did it. Like I just heard it for the first time last week. And I just recorded a few guitar solos on there. And the original guitar player from White Wizard, James LaRue, he's on there as well. And obviously John is like the main songwriter. We have a new drummer called Jonathan Brown, who's excellent too. And we've actually just kind of like put together this new lineup. And I told John, why don't we ask Mark Bowles to sing? Because I'd heard Mark singing on actually one of my friend's songs. And we just did it just to see how it sounded. And it's like really cool. So John's going to be putting that out like any day now.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. And so that's cool. You know, like I was really glad to be able to reconnect with John when I moved back to LA. And you know, because I think White Wizard is a band that actually has like a real fan base and a following. And I feel a bit bad for the fans that, like, you know, the band has just, I mean, it's just been through like so much, you know, crap with like lineup changes and stuff. And so I told John, it's like, if you can keep it alive in some form or another, that would be great. So let's, you know, and now I feel like the guys who's working there all are on the same page in terms of like personality. And so it's like a very cool vibe in the band right now.
That's awesome. And I mean, despite all the, you know, controversy and band scandals that have gone on with White Wizard through the years, the project, the band has always delivered really solid, great music, in my opinion. So I am psyched that you guys are keeping it alive and that we could have a new song on the way.
Dude, you're right. And you have to give credit to John for that. If you like White Wizard, their music and their songwriting, it is all John. He wrote every single song. He writes all the vocal melodies. And like you said, all that silly stuff that's gone on with the band. I mean, you know, now I'm older, I really look back and think, wow, I was like a real immature little kid back then. Like you said, I mean, I'm happy for John, and I think John is a talented songwriter. And so, you know, I hope he can keep, you know, giving the fans like his music, because I think it's cool, man.
Right on. Now, I saw White Wizard play live once New York City. And I don't know if there's been so many lineup changes. I don't know if you were in the band at that time. When were you first in the band?
I was in 2012.
Okay.
And 2013. We did play.
Yeah, I think it was before that. It was at Irving Plaza. Were you a part of that show?
Okay, no, we played at the Webster Hall.
Oh, actually, it wasn't Irving Plaza. It was, I'm sorry, the Gramercy. That's where it was.
Oh, yeah,
New York
City. That
23rd.
Would be probably, the previous lineup then.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, cool. Well, we are psyched for new White Wizard music. We are psyched for your new music. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, and we have not a ton of time left because I do have another slot happening at 4 o'clock my time, New York time. But just your history, I found it, your bio, touching. Like, you moved to L.A., really with no money. And in some ways, you leave L.A., knowing that you need to really get some sort of structure and financial security, I guess would be the word for your life. You go to Berlin, you make that happen, and now you're back in LA, probably stronger in a lot of ways than you were originally. Can you talk about what your business was and how what inspired you to go to Berlin and temporarily leave the music business? And was it your plan to always return to the music business? You know, in 5 minutes or so, can you just share a little of that story?
Yeah, basically, like you said, I moved to LA in 2008. I was like 20 years old. I came with a bag of clothes in one hand and a guitar in the other, literally. And I had like $3,000 in my bank account. That was it. And I put down a deposit on a small room in a house. And I kind of like said, I'm going to live my rock and roll fantasies. And for the next 5 years, I was living in LA. I was doing guitar lessons. I was doing anything I could to make money to kind of like pay my rent every month. I joined White Wizard. I toured with a bunch of different bands. But as you said, like after about 5 years or so, I realized that, like, you know, I'm not making any real money doing this. And it's like always a struggle to pay my rent every month. And I saw a lot of musicians in the similar situation. And I just kind of felt to myself, you know, I could keep doing this for another 10 years and then like wake up and be like 40 and in the exact same situation. Right. So I said, it's going to be difficult, but after all the breakup of White Wizard, I just said, you know, I'm going to try something different. And so it was actually my dad who suggested, why don't you try moving to Berlin? I read in the papers, it's like this really new up and coming city. It's like very dynamic. So I moved to Berlin and just took a break from music. And then just by coincidence, I went in for a job interview at this place. It was called a live escape game, an exit game. And I had no idea what it was, but I took the job. I learned about the business. And then while working at this escape game, I realized, oh, I could do this myself. Like I could actually start my own escape game, which right. I did in England, and grew the business. And then I ran it for a few years and honestly made actually really good money.
Right.
And then, yeah, last year I said, it was kind of like personal stuff, but basically my father died, so there was no need for me to be in Berlin anymore. And I'd made so much money in England at my escape game. I said, let's move back to LA, and this is now the time to move back to LA, get back into rock and roll.
And now, did you sell the business, or do you still have your hand in the business?
Well, because of COVID, it's all on pause, but it's still my younger brother manages it for me.
Oh, wow. Okay. And, fascinating.
I mean, dude, these escape games, I'm sure you've heard of them.
Yeah. Yep.
But in Europe, they were so popular. I mean, the one I started working for, they were making millions of euros every wow. year. Wow. I couldn't believe it. And so as soon as my boss made the mistake of showing me how much money they were making. And then as soon as I saw it, I said, okay, I'm going to start my own in England.
Wow. So what did you do? You take out a loan or something? I mean, you had to start from the ground up, I imagine.
I scraped every penny I had while I was working.
Right.
And I saved together £5,000, which is about $6,000 or $7,000. And wow. that's all I had to start the business. I took a very tiny location in this place called Brighton, England, a very cheap, small location. I started it. And from that $7,000 in the first year, we made like $150,000 profit just in the first year.
Wow, good for you.
So I was just like, okay, this is awesome. And then, yeah, you know, I just kept growing the business, you know.
Yeah, then, well, good for you, man.
Yeah, I mean, there comes a point where it's like, okay, I'm doing this now, I'm making lots of money, but my passion has always been music.
Yeah, so now you're back in LA and you're making music again and it's sounding great and you have probably a lot more financial security and you're probably, you know, in a lot better position than you were when you were there the first time.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I say, it's nice when you don't have to worry about, will I be able to pay my rent and, you know, desperately trying to like get, you know, find a way to make some money while you're here. And now I can just focus on making music. And to be honest with you, I think a lot of musicians are in the same way. They kind of like, I think a lot of even big musicians now, they make their money from other things.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people who want to keep it quiet, you know, like, yeah, so true. I give you credit for being upfront and honest about it, because there's a lot of players out there, and not to name any names, but they're an airline attendant, you know, when they're not rocking with their band, or they're working on cars, or they're running a real estate business, or, you know, there's so I could, you know, go on and on. But hats off to you for being, you know, honest that, you know, you made your money doing something else. I think that's really admirable.
Yeah, man. You know, and I'm writing it all in. I'm sort of like a wannabe writer. So right now I'm actually writing kind of like a book that details how I kind of like in this 5 years made all this money in Berlin and kind of my thought process. And, you know, it's like I say, it's just who I am. And yeah, like I say, I love rock and roll. I love classic rock. Sadly, the paychecks aren't that big in rock and roll anymore, right. But I want to just continue to make, an amazing rock and roll album. Just for the love of music. That's what I'm doing.
I cannot wait to hear it. Please keep us posted on how it progresses. And two quick questions. I do have to wrap it up rather quickly in about 2 minutes. But so do you live in Lemmy's apartment?
Yeah. So
Lemmy's old apartment. That's amazing.
This where I live is not the apartment you saw in the documentary.
Okay.
A couple of years before he died, he actually bought a condo across the street from that place where he was living.
Okay.
I bought that condo. That's where I am right now. That's actually
right. Is it right on Sunset?
It's right across the street from the Rainbow Bar and Grill on Sunset Boulevard. It's across the street from his other place, but it's right behind. It's called the 9000 building on Sunset Boulevard. It's a little bit dark because he died in this apartment.
Wow. Okay.
But yeah, man, you know, it became available right at the right time. I was moving back to LA and I said, that's the place I want. And I, you know, I bought it without even seeing it. I just said, listen, if that's Lemmy's, I want to buy it. I don't need to see it. And so, yeah, that's where I live now, in Lemmy's old place.
Wow. Wow. If those walls could talk, amazing stuff. Yeah. Yeah. And do you own a Gary Moore guitar? That's the other thing I've heard. Yeah. Which is also incredible.
I own a bunch of Gary's stuff. The coolest thing, in my opinion, is I own the amplifier he used to record the song The Loner.
Wow.
And that's actually the same amp I used to record Back on the Strip with as well. Basically, after Gary died, sadly, you know, his family were left with like literally hundreds of guitars and amps. So they auctioned them all off in London. And, you know, that was one of the advantages of me having money, which is I basically went to this auction and bought as many as I could. So I bought a whole bunch of Les Pauls amps.
Right on.
Thing. And that's all the gear I use now and all my stuff.
All right. Well, Will, we do have to wrap it there. I'm going to come to L.A. in hopefully the late summer, early fall. We got to hang, man.
Oh, dude, let's go to the Rainbow, dude. Let's hang out. Absolutely.
Last time I was there, it was 2019. We were at the Chateau Maman, which I guess is now not going to, it's going to be more condos or something. I don't know. They're like,
it's going to be a private club. They're
right.
Not going to let, you know, any
riffraff like myself stay there. Yeah. But we will be back there. We love LA. We love Hollywood. And my wife and I would love to hang out with you guys next time we're there for sure.
Anytime, Mark, just let me know. This has been awesome. Thank you so much for having me on.
And absolutely for sure. Keep me posted on the music. I want to let the listeners know. I want to get the word out about it because the track that I heard Back on the Strip is just great stuff.
Awesome, man. Cheers. Thanks so much.
Will, thank you so much for joining us. Wow, what a great discussion with you. I do want to remind the listeners to use our Amazon links to support the show. You can find those links on markstriegel.net. Now, also on markstriegel.net, I would love it if you signed up for my weekly email. I'm putting a ton of work into these weekly emails and barely anyone signed up for them. So to receive it, it's I think going over good with the people who do get it. So again, go to markstriegel, markstriegel.net and sign up for my weekly email. It hits every Friday and it has all things in Mark Striegel, you know, his world going on there, all kind of brought together. So you can pick and choose from my cornucopia of podcasts and videos and all that stuff. It's all there in that weekly email. Plus, I usually give the write-up of the classic albums thing from the previous week or that week. So, you know, in this Friday's email, you will get a write-up of what I'm about to give you right now, which is a review or my thoughts on Kiss Alive by one of my favorite bands, Kiss. Here we go. Kiss Alive is one of the most essential and greatest albums of all time. Is it possible people forget this? Maybe some are too young or just haven't been enlightened to the power of this live masterpiece. When I turn on Sirius XM, why are they playing the studio version of Rock and Roll All Night off A Dress to Kill instead of the actual hit and far superior version of the song off of Alive? Like, why? When I open up my Apple Music app and go to Kiss, why do they list their first self-titled album and Hotter Than Hell as essential albums and not the band's best album, Alive? I mean, let's face it, Alive is Kiss's greatest record. I realize there are many significant problems currently going on in the world, but right now, these questions are some of the most concerning to me. Alive is one of my favorite and most emotionally important albums of my life. It's also one of the most influential albums ever made. By the summer of 1975, a small percentage of hard rock fans started to recognize that a band from New York called Kiss was one of the most exciting live acts out there. This was partly due to their superhero-like image, costumes, face paint, and high-energy, larger-than-life stage shows, which featured explosions, fire-breathing, blood-spitting, and more. I don't know if they had the confetti that early on, but they might have. I'm not sure. The other thing that made their concerts beyond exciting was their loud, raw, aggressive, well-played, in-your-face, hard and heavy rock. At this time in history, Kiss had great songs, a fantastic live show, a unique and dangerous image, at least by 1975 standards, and three studio albums that did not truly capture the excitement that the band delivered in concert. From their first self-titled album, to Hotter Than Hell, to Dress Than Kill, Kiss's production and recorded sound seemed to be improving slightly from album to album, But in general, it was still sleepy and soft compared to what they gave the fans in the live setting. After low to mediocre sales of the first three albums, Alive was a make-or-break album for this band. Kiss already had the songs, so what they did was take some of them and deliver them on a vinyl, cassette, and 8-track tape, which of course was called 8 tracks because it was 4 sides, and on each side you had 2 stereo tracks. That equals 8 tracks. Get it? So anyways, now Kiss is delivering these great songs that they already had, but they're delivering it with louder guitars, more in-your-face drums, over-the-top vocals, and at times faster tempos. The band brought in Eddie Kramer, who had previously worked with Led Zeppelin, Blue Cheer, Jimi Hendrix, and even Kiss on one of their early demo tapes, to take their recorded sound to the next level. The band recorded some concerts, which ended up becoming the foundation for this so-called live record, but they also re-recorded lots of Alive in the studio. In my opinion, it doesn't matter how they made this album, because the end result was total perfection. From the opening intro of, "You wanted the best and you got it," you know, that gave way to Deuce, those opening chords of Deuce into, oh, Deuce sounds so freaking good on this record, all the way through the album closer, Let Me Go Rock and Roll. Alive was a roller coaster ride that we kept riding over and over again via this 2-disc, groundbreaking, live or not so live experience by the hottest band in the land, Kiss. On a personal note, as a young boy, I kept asking my parents to buy me a Kiss record after having seen them on TV numerous times, but instead they bought me Sean Cassidy, they bought me the Village People, which skipped and we had to return. I think they looked into Kiss and decided that maybe this band was not the greatest for a boy who was still in his single digits. After what I remember feeling like years, although honestly it could have been months, I came up with an alternate plan to score a Kiss album. Her name was Grandma Jewett. And in a phone call to her, she asked me what she could bring me as a gift when she came to visit in a couple weeks. This was my chance. I slowly and nonchalantly walked into the other room, away from my parents, while on the phone with her, pulling the springy, coiled phone cord to its limits. I then whispered into the phone, "Grandma, I want a record by the rock and roll band Kiss." And soon, I was in possession of my first Kiss album, Alive. Grandma told me that when she went to the record store, there was a young man there who helped her pick out the band's very best record. The rest is Kistory. Thank you, Grandma Striegel. You changed my life, literally, with that album. All right, now let's get into a discussion with Anthony Mackey, who supports me on Patreon. Hey, this is Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and on the Zoom with me here today is one of our patrons from Patreon, a guy whose music I've admired through the years, Anthony Mackey, over in Ireland. How are you, man?
Good. Thanks, Mark. How are you?
Yeah, we just had a false start here, so we are starting again. I had a technical glitch on my side, so sorry about that, Anthony. But let's talk about you as a musician. Through the years, you've sent me some of your music. We've even played some of it on Talking Metal. Great stuff. Not hard rock, really. Not metal. I mean, I guess it is harder rock at times, but not metal.
People ask me to describe what my band is, and I always say we're kind of, you know, it's like indie rock with a metal heart, and I suppose right. That's how I would describe myself as well, you know, like I've got my metal is deep within me.
Yeah, and I think we're about even the same age. How long have you been playing music? I mean, you're still out there doing it, but you've been doing it a while.
Yeah, playing since, well, you know, writing songs and playing guitar since mid-80s, you know, since I was a kid, you know, but
right.
In bands throughout the, since then, just constantly doing, you know, doing the band thing, playing wherever we can, getting support gigs wherever we can.
And the band that you're doing now is the Middle Ages. And
that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
How many CDs or albums have you released through the years?
Oh, maybe 7,
wow.
I think.
Good for you, man.
I still, you know, I've thrown out, boxes of them when I've moved house, you know, anyone who's ever done their independent record has experienced.
Yeah, you've thrown out extra copies that you've had.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've done the same thing because it's like a thousand minimum sometimes, you know, you end up with a lot.
Well, when you're spare ones. When you're in your early 20s and you're like, yeah, let's get 1,000,
yeah.
And then you get these boxes. I know the feeling.
Yeah, it is. 1,000 is a lot. And the Middle Ages, you guys have gigged a bunch. And let's talk about maybe some of your more high profile gigs. Who have you played with?
This Middle Ages has only been going on recently, but we gig when we can, you know, because we're all of an age, you know, and you do what you can. But previous bands, you know, we've supported I've also done the writing for, so they kind of feel like the same band to me.
Right.
But, you know, we've supported Napalm Death once, which was bizarre.
Wow.
We supported, and then we'd support Pavement like a couple of years later. So
right on. Yeah, Pavement, by the way. I was mentioning to you, Wowie Zowie was a big record for me.
It's a good record, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were almost too rocking for the sort of indie crowd and too light for the metal crowd.
Right, right. But do you have your own fan base? I mean, is there a group of people that are the true supporters of the Middle
Ages? It's hard to tell.
Yeah, hard to tell.
Yeah, you know, we play and there's people there. So
right, right on. Cool. Well, let's talk a little bit about your history and talk some metal, which is what we do here on Talking Metal.
Yeah.
What initially got you into hard rock and heavy metal?
Right. Well, what got me into metal was when I was about under 10, my brother came home from college one day with If You Want Blood.
Right, right.
On record. And we all basically were going, what the hell is this thing? You know, we sat around listening to it. And there's a moment of feedback from Angus towards the end of Let There Be Rock where I just went, you know, what is that sound? That's what I'm interested in from now on.
Yeah, what an amazing record. I will tell you, when I was like in, I guess like the seventh grade, on the radio, I heard the live version of Whole Lotta Rosie.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're chanting at the beginning of it. And it took me a number of years to figure out what they were saying, but it's Angus.
It's Angus, yeah.
Yeah, Angus. Angus. And then it's almost in time to when he comes in with the guitar. And I've always had trouble listening to the studio version of that song because that live version is so on fire and intense.
Like, I heard that live version first.
Yeah, and, me too.
It wasn't till a couple of years later that I heard the studio, and at the time I didn't appreciate it, but if you listen to that studio version now, oh my god, it's so rocking.
Yeah.
It's actually way more rocking than the live version.
Right, right.
Because it's probably played live.
That record, the studio version of that was Let There Be Rock.
Yeah, yeah.
And that record to me is just insanity.
So,
I mean,
it's so raw.
It's so off. It feels like a runaway train just about to crash at any moment, but it never does. They stay, you know, but you listen to like the title track, like Let There Be Rock, it's incredible because all it is verse, guitar solo, verse, guitar solo. There's no chorus, you know, but it just works. It's so incredible. What else is on there? Dog Eat Dog, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you listen to like the guitar tones on Overdose,
Overdose,
it's so dirty.
God. Yeah.
So it's amazing.
So great. Great stuff. And the first album. Okay. So that was. That was the album that got you into hard rock and heavy metal. What was your first album?
The first album I actually bought, because I'm from a large family, so I had older brothers buying stuff. But the first album I bought myself was Sin After Sin.
Okay.
Judas Priest.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And had it been out? It must have been out a while.
Oh,
at that
it
point.
Was out a while. Yeah. Like, that would have been 82, I think, by the time I bought that.
Right.
Yeah. No, I think I only bought it because it was $1.99.
Oh, okay. So it was affordable. I got it.
Well, I remember standing in the shop and I had Chinatown in one hand and Sin After Sin in the other. And I thought, yeah, well, my brother already has Chinatown, so I'll buy Sin After Sin.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because for me, like I got into Screaming for Vengeance and Defenders of the Faith. That it was that era that I really came to Priest. And when I went back to the 70s era stuff, like Stained Class and Sin After Sin, it didn't grab me quite as much as like the Defenders record or Screaming or even, you know, Hellbent for Leather as or Killing Machine to people in Europe was that those albums I just love. But it was a number of years before I really got more into the 70s era Priest. And I think it was I had to go back and first discover Sad Wings of Destiny, which was just such an amazing record. And that was the record that kind of opened my mind more to the 70s sounds of Judas Priest.
Well, I must say that Sin After Sin was the first record I actually bought and made money, but it took me a while to really warm to it. Because at the time, I think British Steel was the album out at the time. And, you know, that was a staple in our house, you know.
So good. Yeah.
So, I bring back Sin After Sin and put it on, and it sounds different. And to a 13 year old's ears who mightn't have the patience for that.
Yeah.
You know, like, I get more out of that album now than I would have then.
Absolutely. And let's talk about your first gig. What's your first gig that you remember seeing?
Well, first gig would have been around the same time. It's 1983. And this is a good first gig. You know, people can get a bit cringy at this question. But it was an all-day festival in Dublin headlined by Black Sabbath. And
this is Ian Gillan.
Ian Gillan, yeah. And who else was on the bill? Motorhead, Twisted Sister.
Wow.
Anvil and Mama's Boys, who were an Irish band started. And, you know, I was probably more excited to see Mama's Boys anybody else, you know.
Now, I know that name, Mama's Boys. Like, they were. I remember seeing them like in Krang magazine.
You would have,
Would I know one of their songs? What was their biggest song?
Well, the biggest song probably in the States was probably their Quiet Riot cover. They did a cover of Mama, We're All Crazy Now.
Okay.
Which was, by that stage, like they were kind of, it was like after Quiet Riot had done the Slade cover, you know, and it seemed a bit, even then I thought, do they really need to be doing this? Because
That was a Slade cover too, right?
Yeah. Whereas they had three independent albums out in Ireland and Europe before then. And we were all deep into that.
Wow. Very cool. You saw Gillan with Sabbath that night?
Yeah. I have vague memories of it. Yeah.
Vague memories, yeah. Because was obviously a short-lived era of Black Sabbath. A lot of people consider it kind of, you know.
I know you're a big fan of that.
Yeah. I think it's become one of those cult classic albums, if you will, over time. But yeah, I love that brief.
It's kind
era.
Of a bizarre sounding record, isn't it?
Yeah, I know Tony Iommi hated the mastering on it and it has trouble listening to it, but I don't mind it that much. But okay, favorite gig. That was your first gig, but what's your favorite gig?
Oh, my all-time favorite gig was 91 and it was AC/DC, right? So if you can say that I started listening to AC/DC in 81. Now I know Back in Black was out. And I remember we just got into AC/DC. It was like, oh, their singer just died. So we got into them in 81. I didn't get to see them until 91. And when you're that age, as you said recently on the podcast, 10 years is a long time. So by the time I finally got to see AC/DC live, it was 91. And it was that was hugely exciting. But then a few months before that gig happened, it was announced that King's X were supporting them. And they my number one band at the time, you know?
Yeah.
So it was like a dream gig.
Wow, that's very cool. Very cool. And let's see, how about this podcast, the Talking Metal podcast? When do you first remember finding it or hearing it? How long have you been listening to it?
I had to look this up because it seems like it's been a long time, but I think it's 10 years. I don't know how I found it. I think I was working one day and just was looking up, looking for a just getting into podcasts, you know, and talking metal. And the next thing I heard an interview, I think Rudy Sarzo was on. And
I think I only spoke with him once, although some I get mixed up here. And I think that was an in-person interview. I remember that.
Yeah. And it was at the time it was so... it was so new to hear these people being interviewed instead of reading, you know? So, yeah. It was just something about the tone of talking metal that I liked, and I've just stuck with it since, you know, because I've listened to other rock podcasts and, you know, they've been a bit, you know, some guy talking about chicks and yeah, it was just,
right.
I didn't like that, the tone, whereas talking metal, it was just straightforward and you seem pretty open-minded.
Yeah. Plus if I talk about chicks, I usually hear about that from my wife. So I
No, you do occasionally, but like I can't remember what podcast I'm actually talking about here. It could have been, I'm not even gonna say.
Right.
I can't remember.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. In this country, there was a guy, he's still on the radio, Howard Stern.
And
he used to talk a lot about like women and chicks and stuff back in like the 90s, especially, but he's kind of evolved past that. And, you know, it's no longer really PC to do it the way he used to. And I think he recognizes that, but I do think he spawned a lot of people that came after him and still want to carry on that tradition. But yeah, I mean, you know, I hear what you're saying. I mean, that's why I've tried to avoid politics, and I know I've gotten into it a little bit.
Yeah, I don't mind that so much.
Yeah, well, I don't know what your political beliefs are, but believe me, when there are certain people who have strong political beliefs, and as soon as I say something that maybe is not what they believe, I do hear from them.
Sure, yeah.
And I respect that, and I've always tried to keep that out of what we do on Talking Metal, because I do believe it's toxic, you know, it's not what we're here to do. We're here to celebrate the music that we love. And
well, it did help that your theme music had Murders in the Rumor
right.
on it.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's
stop
my favorite.
Using that now though, man, I have to stop using that intro and playing music just because I don't want to get thrown off of Apple Podcasts. We've already been thrown off of Spotify, and I'm trying to get reinstated to Spotify. So for the time being, we are being good and not playing music, which I think we'll be able to make it work. I think we'll be able to make it work. But yeah, Murders in the Rue Morgue off of Killers, for sure, one of my all-time favorite Maiden songs. What are you a big Maiden fan?
I was a Maiden fan, I think, up until Seventh Son. You know, that album really didn't do anything for me the way it has for other people. And I just kind of never really got back on board with them.
Right.
Although A Matter of Life and Death, I do like.
Yeah, I think that was definitely a departure for them. They went somewhere a little different with that album. I do like that album, too. I can find things I like in all eras of Maiden, believe it or not. What are some of your favorite bands? They don't have to be metal bands. You mentioned Ghost, but what other bands, rock, country, whatever, are you listening to?
Oh, God. You know, this is one of those times when your mind just goes blank. Like, so,
yeah.
Like, I'm obviously King's X are one of my boys, you know?
King's X.
But my big bands that I really like are Weezer, King's X, Marillion. I don't know if you ever heard of Marillion.
Of course, I've heard of them. I've heard them, but I've never really took that deep dive. I know a lot of friends are really into them. I love Weezer. I'm a big Weezer fan.
Marillion would be fairly daunting, you know, for someone who's not into them.
Yeah, but their fans are just intense. Like,
they are mental. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I would have been one of those, you know. I got into them in
right on
early 80s, you know, and I've been with them ever since, you know.
Right on. Cool, man. Well, it's great connecting with you and quote unquote meeting you here on Zoom for the the really first time. I know we've been exchanging emails and talking online for years.
I'm sure I'll think of things, you know, why the fuck didn't I say
we'll
that,
come,
you know?
Yeah, we'll come back in a few months, man. Come back. And thanks so much for your support. Let me ask you, we do a bonus podcast on Patreon that I do with Victor. I do the Talking with Mark Striegel podcast. I do Talking Metal. There's also Talking Rock. I don't know if you've heard that
one. Oh, I do. I know that. Yeah, look, I listen to them all.
You listen to them all. And what, just for me, any creative input, what direction do you like the most? What makes you happy when you hear the show? What do you maybe feel is cringy and don't like?
Let me think. I
can be totally honest.
Okay, I know you're kind of relaunching Talking Metal.
Right.
And you've past few episodes. Now, I don't know. You're being really forward and enthusiastic and
right.
Whereas what really works is the Mark Striegel podcast, where you're just really relaxed and I know that's a different tone to the Big Daddy podcast, you know.
Right.
So
right.
I suppose
to the Mark Striegel podcast that we're talking about, that Anthony's talking yeah. about, is exclusive to the people on Patreon. And generally what happens is Victor and I do that every Sunday, and I just roll, you know, I've been up for a couple hours. I turn on the mic and there's usually no agenda, and we just kind of riff, and sometimes I go a little negative and complain. And
yeah. I think somewhere in the middle is the sweet spot, you know?
Okay.
I know it's very right. hard to try to force that.
Right. But there's a real vibe you feel to that.
Yeah, that really, and it's
unguarded.
It's really enjoyable, you know.
It's awesome to hear.
And you know, Victor's great. You know, when Victor was on, like, because it took me a while to warm to Victor, I must admit, but I, right. I really like him now, you know, and he's great, yeah. and he's very knowledgeable. And same as your co-host on Talking Rock, whose name was
Joey Haney.
Joey Haney, yeah, he's very knowledgeable, you know.
Yeah,
and that's really great, you know, because you'll throw something at him and he'll just, you know, he knows exactly what you're
those guys
about.
Both know their stuff, man. They, for sure, I'm intimidated by both of them sometimes.
Actually, all right, man. I feel like I'm spending so much time listening to podcasts that it's really is eating into my time that's allotted for music, you know.
Oh, really? Wow. Well, I don't want to rob you from like, your creative like, music. Yeah.
No, I mean, not being making, but listening to music. Like if you've got, like, I listen to maybe four or five different podcasts and they're every week. And if they're more than an hour long, which some of them are, that's, you can find your day going.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we appreciate you listening to this podcast and all the podcasts that I do, and your support means the world to me. So great connecting with you here on Zoom and seeing your face and hanging with you and talking rock and metal with you. And thank you, Anthony.
Oh, you're welcome, Mark.
All right. Big thanks to Anthony Mackie for joining us here on Talking Metal. Anthony, you've been supporting me for so long and I don't take it for granted. And your, really, I'd say friendship means the world to me. So yeah, man, keep rocking, stay in touch, reach out anytime. Let's do that again sometime soon. I did say in that interview that I'd interviewed Rudy once in person, Rudy Sarzo, that is. That's wrong. I interviewed him twice in person, both times in New York City. And yeah, so just wanted to correct that little bit, although probably no one would have noticed. But yeah, I definitely spoke with Rudy twice in person. So good stuff. And let's right now wrap things up with a Todd LaTorre interview here on Talking Metal, the voice of Queensryche. Always a great honor. They thanked me on some of the recent, not the last one, but the two previous records. Queensryche thanked me, a big fan of these guys, and that really meant a lot to me. And Stephen Saylor gave me a copy of The Verdict, which I just loved. So thank you, Stephen. Please consider joining Stephen and Anthony and everyone else on Patreon. We hang out there. We do bonus podcasts. We do bonus videos.
you heard Anthony Mackie said, I think he actually likes the bonus podcasts better than this one. Maybe I'm putting words in his mouth, but he seems to really like the bonus podcasts. So there you go. Other ways to support: PayPal donations and using those Amazon links. If you live in the UK, the United States, or Canada, those links are up in the show notes and also on markstriegel.net. All right, here we go. Todd Latore of Queensryche. A shortened version of this. Again, the full version is on Talking with Mark Striegel. Hey, it's Mark Striegel, and what an honor once again to be talking to Todd Latore, the vocalist of Queensryche, who has a great, great record, and I mean that sincerely, Rejoice in the Suffering. It's coming out in early February, February 5th, via Rat Pack Records. Todd, how are you, man?
I'm well. How are you? Doing good?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. It's been a while. I know I saw you in concert when you came through New York with Queensryche and Fate's Warning was opening up last time. That was a great show at Irving Plaza. But I think the last time we spoke was M3, maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. The Irving Plaza show. That was a good one. That was a sold out show.
that was an amazing night. You guys really killed it. And it was an emotional night. You had I think a friend who was sick or passed away. And I remember. You know what?
That's right. I forgot that was the night. Yeah. A friend of mine. And he did pass away. Actually, he passed away. His name was Dominic Vasquez. He was a lifelong dear friend of mine. And right after that tour, he died like an hour before I landed home, and that was a Friday, and I was going to go see him on a Saturday. And my mom called me and said, are you home? I said, yeah, I'm home. And she said he passed away. But yeah, that was the night at Irving Plaza. That was the night I got the devastating news that he was really not in good condition and was in the hospital, and they turned the defibrillator. He had a pacemaker with a defibrillator in his heart, and they decided to shut it off. And so the next time he had an episode, that was going to be it. So it was a very emotional. Yeah. I remember crying on stage. It was really hard to perform. That was really tough.
Well, I first, I'm so sorry for your loss. But second, you know, you were a professional, you delivered, and the fans that were in the crowd, like myself, we really felt that emotion, and we felt your pain and felt connected to you that night. So I thought it was a special night to be there.
You know,
with you.
Thank you. I could tell that people, you know, you try to hide that stuff, and at some point you just can't hide it anymore. And you could tell that people knew that I was crying and that they felt for that moment. And, you know, I can feel like kind of that support in the room on people's faces when that happened, to be honest. Now that I remember that, if I go back and really visualize that moment, I do remember that.
Yes. Yep. Definitely. Well, we are talking about your brand new record again, coming out in February. Rejoice is in the Suffering, and great stuff, man. I mean, you stay really heavy on this, but yet it's melodic at the same time. I want to kind of do a lightning round on the actual songs, but before we go there, let's talk about the people who were involved in the record with you. Can you tell us a little bit about who Craig Blackwell is?
Yeah. So Craig, can you see me now? I got my video.
Yeah.
On.
Yeah. We'll just use the audio, but I can definitely see it. Okay.
Yeah. It makes it better. So Craig is a lifelong friend of mine that I met in high school. A friend, we had a mutual friend who played bass in his band called Blackwell, and like they played the high school talent show and they were really good. And I was, you know, starting on drums for a year or two, a couple years at that point. And my friend Russ said, oh, you got to hear my friend Todd. And so Craig came over to the house, and I think I played like, I don't know, Hang Tough from Tesla or something from Dokken, Mr. Scary or something. And they were like, oh, you know, you're in. And I was like 14 or 15 when that happened. And that was the very beginning of our friendship. And we've written music together over the years. And, you know, you fast forward decades. And I said, you know, when the pandemic hit and we had time to do this, you know, it was something I always wanted to do with Craig.
Right on.
I do a solo thing, like, you and I are going to do this no matter what. And so, but yeah, he's just a lifelong friend that I've known. That's a really talented guy, and he's an undiscovered talent, really. Like, people outside of this area really don't know him. So this is kind of his real first introduction on a big scale, where wow. people get to really hear his playing and that kind of thing. So I'm really excited for Craig. You know, Matt Laporte, who played in John Oliva's Pain. In fact, I'm wearing a John Oliva's Pain t-shirt right now, which is ironic. Cool.
Right.
But, you know, he kind of opened the door for me. And in the same way, you know, I'm kind of wanting to do that with Craig. You know, he deserves it.
And Craig is doing all the guitars, and is he doing bass too? Bass.
Yeah, he played the guitars and bass, and I did the drums and vocals, and Craig did some kind of synth stuff you'll hear in the background, like on Pretenders. And then, yeah. So he and I are the ones that wrote and recorded the record.
Cool. And of course, Zeus is involved, and you've worked mm-hmm. with him before. And yep. How does he work as a producer? Are you sitting in the room with him? Or, I mean, I don't know, especially in the COVID times, if you physically were with him, or was it more sending him tracks?
So for this record, Zeus just did the mixing and the mastering. He didn't produce anything on the record. There was an initial press release that went out that was a little ambiguous, that said alongside producer Zeus, which he is a producer.
Right.
But on this record, he did the mixing and mastering. He does the producing and mixing and mastering for the records with Queensryche that he does with us. But, you know, we recorded the album and sent him all the recordings, and then he made it sound as great as it does. So
awesome. And it is just such a rich production. It is great. Let's go through some of the songs, not all of them, but let's hit some of these, kind of a lightning round, if you want to throw, you know, sure. little thoughts about these songs at me, and I'll throw some of my thoughts at you. Dogmata, the strong album opener. Love those like dissonant chords at the end. A great yeah. track to open up with. Tell us a little 30 seconds on Dogmata.
Okay. I mean, that song kind of encompasses the a very fundamental, the dogma that is the premise and the foundation for a lot of religions, and the extreme side of it. So when I say lashes carving the skin, you know, they still do lashings in Saudi Arabia, and they whip yeah. people. I talk about a suicide bomber in there, stoning people. So kind of it's, you know, as an anti-theist, these are issues that I talk about and that I think about, and, you know, separating faith, mind you, from dogma.
Got it.
You know, what I consider to be poison in that whole thinking process. You don't need all that. Still have, if somebody wants to have a relationship with what they consider God, that's all fine and good. But it's the dogma that permeates into society. And when you have laws and legislation and discrimination based solely on what the dogma says, to me, that's a problem. So that song is about exposing some of those the extremism of dogma.
Got it. Pretender is the song you mentioned earlier, that kind of gothic almost intro, and then it goes straight into this heavy metal sound, but then there's like this unsettling movement behind it. Maybe that's what you were mentioning, like this like sustaining sound kind of in the background at times. It really
keyboard there that
it's haunting, really.
Yeah that's another one that's basically talking about, you know, the charlatans, you know, the drink this holy, you know, blessed water and put it on your, you know, the Peter Popoffs of the world. You know, the just the scam artists, the bullshit about religion. And that's what that song's about.
Right on. And again, we won't hit all the songs, but some more for sure. Darkened Majesty. To me, this felt almost the most like a Queensryche song out of any of them on the album. And just your thoughts on this one. Another great one. Hooky chorus on it.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, that chorus definitely has a more of a Queensryche Crimson Glory-ish kind of sound and delivery and that kind of thing. Let's see. That, you know, I'm trying to remember exactly, but the lyrics to that are kind of surrounding basically everyone talking shit about everybody else, not realizing that they have their own demons, they have their own skeletons in their closet. And there's a line in there that says, you know, I can see you're living in a big glass house. I think you better put those stones down right away. And it's basically, and you know, some of it's personal, dealing with, you know, kind of those, the dark things that enter your mind. And, you know, I kind of try to face the darker sides of life, and maybe to an unhealthy degree sometimes.
Okay.
Where I'm thinking about morbidity and the ugliness that people don't want to think about. And so there's a line in there that says, in the dark where you can't see is the place where I run free. So that's kind of like you have no idea of the thoughts that are in my mind.
Right on.
It's a little abstract, but
yeah,
it's hard to summarize that song lyrically. Yeah.
No, I got you. Right on. And again, we're not hitting every song, but we're just kind of hitting some here and getting Todd's thoughts on each one. And again, this is Todd LaTorre. The new record is Rejoice in the Suffering. Title track is great, but let's go to Apology. Love this song. Again, a little bit slower, but still heavy. Yeah.
So that song,
Last Dream, Last Day, Release Me from the Agony, great stuff.
So that song, the title track and Apology were written about my dad's suicide.
Wow. Okay.
He committed suicide in 2014. And so I wrote that kind of like, okay, through his eyes, what was his last day like? Like I've imagined him taking a shower. He's looking at himself in the mirror. He's combing his hair. He's doing his thing. He's leaving his driveway for the very last time.
Wow.
I believe this was planned. And and so there was a, you know, the date that he did this was significant, and I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
And so so that song was written about what his last day might have been through his eyes.
Right. Wow. That's heavy stuff.
The very end of the song where the high singing is, and now you've gone away. There's nothing left to say. You never even said goodbye to me. That's me talking about to my dad.
Wow. Cause I had no idea that's what it was about. And I'm sorry for your loss. It's tragic, but from that song, I got a deep sadness, but there was also this little bit of like hopefulness I got at times from the song. So it was
in the chorus, it's like, so he shot himself. Okay. And so the chorus, is about him. You know, I think of him doing it in his office with his, you know, credentials on his walls, and he's in his throne, and like, this is a powerful sanctuary for him. And so the chorus says, hold on, let me think of how it goes. Finally, I'll get the last word for the first time. Suddenly, I feel so free. Why you ask today? Just read between the lines. This is meant to be my apology. Now, that's a very deep, personal thing that I don't want to get into, rather, but the short version is, you know, I remember saying, am I going to get a letter from him? Is it going to be, hey, son, by the time you read this, you will already know, you know, and all these things. And I remember my wife saying, you know, based on the significance of what some of the lyrics mean, that are no one would know except for me and my sister and a few people. It was almost like, okay, this is my way of saying sorry based on the significance of the day that I did it.
Right.
And, okay. And it was, and so that's, you know, and I often wondered, would I ever explain in any degree what this song is about? And I was never sure. You're the first person that's asked me what this song's about.
Right. Wow.
And, cause I don't always like to say, I like people to just think about what it is to them. But I do have one friend who, has heard that, a really close friend who's heard it. And there was actually a suicide in that person's family. And when we were talking about those stories together on a phone call, when I did, because he never asked me what it was about, but when I said, this is what it's about, privately to a very good friend, he heard that song in a whole nother way.
Wow.
And really connected with it, and almost in like a bittersweet healing kind of a way, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I thought that was a perfect album closer for what I considered the main record, which was songs 1 through 10.
Okay.
11, 12, 13 were bonus tracks, but I always consider like the album to be 1 through 10.
Okay. So is one by one, is that a bonus track then? Or is
that's
that
a bonus track?
Okay.
And that's have you heard that one?
Yeah, and just to kind of segue off the record, I did want to ask about that song, because to me, out of all the songs on the record, and I know you have experience and history in Tampa, and I mean, we think of death metal. I mean, that there's definitely some death metal sounds coming through that song very, very strongly. I mean, I can hear even like some Lamb of God or Arch Enemy feel at times. Great stuff. Were you into the death metal scene of Tampa?
I mean, parts of it, you know, I was more of a thrash guy.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, my wife loves black metal.
Okay.
You know, a lot of like more melodic death metal, black metal, Behemoth.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. And I've always liked the guttural, you know, some of those deep gutturals. And I was like, and I've been writing music that's more in the melodic death black metal vibe. So I have more songs that are even more so than one by one, still very groove oriented though, not blast beats, not like none of that. But you know, full on, yeah, almost like Behemoth meets Gojira.
Okay, cool.
A little bit on some of the other stuff that I've written. And I have so much fun writing that stuff.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun because, you know, it's you're vocalizing. I don't consider that singing. I just consider that vocalizing, because there's not much of a note or a pitch. You know, you're just kind of, that's not, right. You can't find a note in there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I love doing that, because there's just a certain attitude and darkness that you're never going to achieve if you're singing. You know, it's more of an attitude and a feeling than anything else. But you know, Tampa, this is kind of hailed as like the birthplace of death metal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I'm definitely familiar with all of them, you know, Deicide, Obituary, Atheist, Death, that kind of thing. But I don't know. I wanted to do one song on this record to show people a little bit of what I can do with that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a diverse record. Again, great stuff. It's Rejoice in the Suffering by Todd LaTorre, who we know from Queensryche, of course. And we mentioned Zeus earlier. I got to tell you, he put kind of a cryptic thing up on his Instagram a couple days ago, implying that he is working on some new Queensryche material. I think it's at Reich number 4, which I'm guessing is the fourth record with you, right?
Right. So he actually, while we were doing this interview, he just walked past me and out to the studio, because I have Michael Wilton here at.
Oh, okay.
So we're just getting together. Just Michael said, hey, I got some time. I'd like to come down to Florida and kind of do some writing with you. And I said, hell yeah, come on down. It's you know, it's all good. And so I told Zeus, and he was like, dude, I got to come down and, nice. And like, let's get the ball rolling and that kind of thing. And so like with him to help move things along. And so I just said, yeah, I haven't seen anyone in the band other than Casey, because he lives about a half hour away. I haven't seen the band in almost a year.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's driving me nuts. So, you know, Michael arrived yesterday and it was like, so good to see his face. And, you know, Casey picked him up from the airport and brought him over. And so it's just, you know, it's just us working on new ideas and getting things going and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I didn't know he was filming when I picked him up.
Right. And you pull up in the
hair,
car. Yeah.
His hair grew. He had really short hair and his hair grew. And I was, my windows were tinted. And I'm looking, I see somebody with a phone. I didn't know it was him at first. And I'm looking like, who is that? And I rolled the window down and it was him. And for a second, I thought it was Michael for a second. And so then I guess I don't have Instagram, but he put it on Instagram and I guess it was kind of blowing up and
yeah.
People were like, oh, what does this mean? You know? And so, yeah, we're, you know, working on new material. So,
awesome. Great yeah. to hear. And I know we do have to wrap it up in a cool. minute, but, you know, was shocking news this week with, I believe a friend of yours, John Schaefer. And I mean, we've all kind of just been like, wow, what happened? I mean, we love the guy's music, and just a little shell shocked over this. How did you react to the news about John? Was it surprising? I mean, you know him,
You know, it's like somebody showed me a photograph and they didn't say anything. They just showed me the picture. And I text back, John Schaefer, ? Like, and then I said, that's John. Like, I know it is,
yeah.
You know? And, but I didn't have confirmation, but I was like, I know it's him.
Yeah.
And then it was revealed. Yes, that's him. And I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, like I know some of his viewpoints on things and, you know, I was on the one hand, it's shocking because you're like, holy shit. I'm friends with this guy.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, you're like, you know, I'm not really surprised. You know, because if you know how he thinks about the government and different things, you're like, okay, yeah, that seems like it's not far-fetched that he would be there. But at the same time, you're thinking, wow, like, you know, this is a really, like, this has never happened in my lifetime or any of our lifetimes where we've seen people storm the Capitol and literally, like, assault. These are the same people that say back the blue and like we support right. our police. And then I'm watching people fighting and beating, you know, trying to beat up police officers and cause they think the election is rigged. And, you know, that's not where I stand. But I was like, holy crap. You know, and of course, all the circles of people that we know each other, we're all like, holy
yeah.
shit, you see, that's John. And then there was like a wanted by the FBI.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I was like, holy crap, you know, like, so I don't know. I mean, I have no idea if he's turned himself in, if he's on the run, if they got him, if I have yeah. no idea, because I haven't communicated with him at all. But, you know, the band is taking a severe, there's a lot of backlash.
Yeah.
Online and you know, I mean, John's a man of his convictions and. Right. You know, it's, I don't want to comment one way
yeah, sure.
other than the fact that, yeah, you know, I know him and the times we've been around each other, you know, he's always been respectful to me, but of course in a music situation. I think we have polarizing views on how we see things,
yeah.
but, you know, yeah, it's pretty nutty, huh?
Yeah, definitely shocking and Yeah, I don't know what else to say about it, but let's we'll move on to we'll end it with maybe a happier topic.
Okay.
Apology was the song we were talking about on your record, but you're also playing drums on a song called Apology besides that one with Jason Bieler, who was recently on the show, which I think it sounds great, man. This song is awesome. Can you talk a little bit about your involvement on the new song by Jason Bieler, Apology?
Yeah, so really funny story. So he calls me. He's like, hey, you know, and I did like several songs on drums for him. And then I don't think those other songs made the record, but one of the ones that I did, Apology, was on the record. So he emails me this song and it says Apology. And I go, I'm like, did I send him Apology? Like, did I mess up and send him my, I don't understand, because it said Apology. And I'm like, did I send him my song? What's going on here? And so I called him, dude, I have a song called Apology. It's done. He's like, oh, this is a working title. I'm like, okay, cool. Cause my song's called Apology.
Right.
So then when it was all done, it says Apology. And I call him. I'm like, I thought that was a working title, dude. So now when people put in Todd LaTorre Apology, I don't know what they're going to get. So we kind of laughed about that. And I said, all right, I'll show you my timestamp if you show me your timestamp of which one was done first. But, you know, he sent me the song and he had some awesome guest musicians on the record and on that song. And I laid drums down and I sent them back to him and I said, let me know what you think. If you don't like something, dude, I'll change it. Like, it's your song, whatever you want, I'll try to make happen for you. And he's like, oh man, this is great. Like, I love what you did here. I love what you did there. Hey, you know, what about on the ending if we just do this? And I said, okay, well, let me go back and tweak the ending. And, you know, he's a good friend and he's a really talented songwriter.
Absolutely.
And he's an incredible guitar player. I mean, the guy is so good and he's a really good singer. Like, he has a very unique sound and style. And, you know, I was a huge Saigon Kick fan. When that first record came out, I remember I was driving to Texas and I just played the shit out of that and Cowboys from Hell. I remember playing those two records back to back on like a 17-hour drive. And so fast forward years later, I got to know him and become friends with him. And I was like, dude, he's like, do you want to play drums? I was like, I would be honored to play. Yeah, hell yeah. And so for me, it was like, you know, just as like a fan, friend, like feather in my cap. Holy shit, this is awesome. You know, because I'm a drummer and I was listening to them as a drummer. And he knows me as a singer, but he knows I drum too. And so I was like, you know, I want to play drum. Like, I don't want to sing on your record. I want to drum on it. He was like, yeah, let's do it. And I was like, right on. So yeah, the record's really awesome. I wish him all the best with that upcoming release. And it's a cool song. It's a really cool song.
Absolutely.
It's vibey. Yeah. It's got a vibe.
And again, the new solo record by you is Rejoice in the Suffering. It's out February 5th by Rat Pack Records. Todd, you're always such a great interview. Thank you for hanging with me today. And I know we're a little over our...
Dude, it's fine. It's fine. When we're done here, I'm going to go to Aldi's and get a few grocery things for the guys.
Okay.
And we're going to work on music. So we're running over a few minutes. Like, I can talk for another couple minutes if you want. It's like whatever you want.
Yeah, I think we're good, Todd. And please tell Michael I said hello. I don't know if he remembers me, but you guys gave me a thanks a couple albums ago in the liner notes, which I've always appreciated. And we cannot wait to get Queensryche back out on the road rocking us. I'm ready. I just got my first vaccine shot. So I'll be ready to rock soon.
Wow.
It's a long story, but yeah.
Okay, so you got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. I'm glad. Which one did you get?
Moderna.
Any side effects?
Not really. I felt like my muscles were a little sore, like for a couple days.
Okay, but
Yeah, but no fever, no sore throat, nothing like that. But,
good. Yeah, I tell you, once we can get some herd immunity and get like things back to normal. I mean, in Florida, it's the wild fucking west, dude.
Right.
Like bands are gigging, bars are open, everything's open. Like nothing. I mean, you go into a store, people have masks on, but other than that, you go into a bar, people walk in. And you know, they sit at the bar. There's 50 people, no mask.
Really? Wow.
I don't go out and do any of that, but I know people that are playing local shows, and there's even national acts that have come through and toured here.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's we got to be careful and safe. The quicker we can get that under control, the quicker we can all fucking get back to normal. Cause this sucks, dude.
Yeah, it definitely does. And watched the Kiss New Year's Eve special. I thought Paul Stanley said it best when he said there's a vaccine, but the vaccine only works if you get it. So I think it's really important for everyone to keep wearing masks and get that vaccine as soon as you can. And I was quite pushy and listen, I ended up getting it. So you can get it. And I know as time goes by, it's going to even become more and more readily available. So,
yeah.
All right, Todd.
Glad that you're good. Yeah. And thanks for the interest for the interview. And I hope you like the record and
love it, man. Sincerely. It's great. It's great stuff. Really good. Really
cool,
good,
man. Well, thanks so much and have a great day and hope to see you in the near future.
Yeah. Hopefully we can hang sometime in the New York area when you come through here again. All right, man. Okay. Stay safe.
Right. Okay. You too,
bye. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us, guys. All right. This has been another episode of the Talking Metal Podcast. All things Mark Striegel can be found at markstriegel.net, MarkStriegel. And use our Amazon links. Thank you.